Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 361 for comics originally released on July 9th, 2014. Now, starting us off in DC is Grayson number one. This is where they took Nightwing that they kind of sort of didn't kill off in Forever Evil. I don't think that's really a spoiler. I mean, that's a pretty big thing and really sets the scene for this title. I have been a fan of Nightwing for ages. He's one of my favorite characters. And I'll admit, I had some minor reservations around this direction they were going to take, but kind of went into the series cautiously optimistic, hoping for the best. And the previews of the title that they had, well, pretty much everywhere the last couple of weeks, was pretty good. So I went into this hopeful for the best. How much Nightwing have you read, and what are your thoughts on the character?
I've read all the New 52 stuff. I thought it was really solid. And, you know, I was kind of disappointed when they canceled it. I mean, it had some up and down issues, and I didn't really care for the Chicago stuff as much, but I thought Nightwing was pretty good. And I was surprised when they went this direction, and I guess I wasn't looking forward to this. I was cautious as I was approaching this title.
Yeah, I think, you know, we were both kind of thinking it's like, you know, they've been doing decently with the character. He's a good character to begin with. There's nothing broken that needs fixing.
I think it was selling like 45,000 a month or something too, which is pretty solid for a DC book.
It had actually dropped below 40,000 a bit, getting closer to the like the 36,000-37,000, I believe. But it was selling well enough that it's not like it was in need of a retooling or whatever. The most recent issue had kind of bounced up, but you kind of get that on the last issue of a title of, gee, let's see where it ends. And that final issue of Nightwing was kind of a recap of the character's career, at least pitched as such. I don't think it really was such. But kind of a transition between that title and this title, and of at least of sorts. I really think they did a pretty good job in this issue of capturing kind of the core of the Dick Grayson character, remaining true to his past and giving him really a very fresh, brand new start here. And if you don't know his backstory, I mean, you're told he was Robin and Nightwing and all that stuff. And frankly, beyond that, it doesn't really matter all that much any of the details. You get what you need here. And I felt this was an incredibly accessible issue. It set up his new status quo really well. It actually did a really good job setting up Spiral, who I knew nothing about because it didn't exist before that, before this. So in terms of how they positioned the character and the title and stuff, I thought they did a really good job on the writing and stuff in that regard.
Oh, yeah. I thought this was a really fantastic number one issue because it was beginning, middle, and end. It was a really nice story on its own, and it mm-hmm. had a great through line, some mystery and intrigue to propel you forward into future issues. What I've been asking for from creators is to do these sort of stories, you know, don't make it one of five, one of seven, you know, make it a solid chapter that's an accessible story and great on ramp. In my opinion, it didn't really even need to be a Grayson. This could have been a fresh launch and I understand why they did that because of the name recognition, and I'm sure sales will be nice and healthy because of that, but this could have had any name, and this could have been any. This didn't really need to be Dick Grayson in this role.
Are you familiar with the character Nemesis, who at one point was a backup feature in Brave and the Bold back in the day?
No, it doesn't sound familiar.
He later showed up in, I think it was Suicide Squad and one or two other places, but he was essentially a super spy kind of a guy. He had the masks and all that kind of stuff, and there was an aspect of this story that had that kind of a vibe to it. So if you like this, it's worth checking out the old Nemesis stuff. And I agree that they almost could have put any character, any name on this, and it would have done pretty well. Yet I also think, like I said, they did a really good job of making it enough of a Nightwing Dick Grayson story, tone, and style that it's not like it was just anybody, if you know what I mean. They right. really walked that line incredibly well. I really want to give a shout out to the artist on this because Michael Janin is not a name I recognize. The art in general was terrific. The use of the acrobatics and kind of the ghosted in effect, if you will, of how he's been leaping around or whatever, really captured the motion of the character, the acrobatic nature of Dick Grayson. And I mean, this was just a joy to behold in terms of the art. The only nitpick I would have on the art is the Photoshop effect they do for
Mr. Minos.
Yeah,
face.
Exactly.
Yeah, his face is kind of odd.
He it's a like a spiral effect or whatever. And there's when we first see him, he's like facing about 45 degrees off, and the effect just didn't quite work there. But that was just an interesting decision in terms of how they want that character to look. Beyond that, again, the art was great. They set stuff up well. I loved the use of Midnighter, which was it was more than just kind of a cameo appearance. It was effective. It fit. And I want to see that character come back to this book. Having Midnighter and Grayson fight was just cool, particularly the way the fight ended. And it, like I said, a rematch is, if we don't get that in the next 6 months or something, I'll be surprised and disappointed.
Do we think the identity protection implants are what we're seeing on Mr. Minos's face? Is the same implants that he gave to Nightwing and the other girl, I can't remember her name off the
Helena Bertinelli. You don't recognize the name.
Yeah, Helena Bertinelli. There you go.
But you didn't recognize her name.
No.
That's the alter ego of Huntress. That's not Huntress. This is clearly a very different character. But by giving her that name, I mean, that sets up some definite questions.
Well, that's her last name? That's Huntress's last name is Bertinelli?
One, she's used that identity when we first got the Huntress miniseries in the New 52, before it was clear it was in the New 52, I guess. It's Helena Wayne, but the post-crisis version of Huntress was Helena Bertinelli, daughter of Mobster and all this kind of stuff, because she couldn't be the daughter of Batman in a single one universe, you know, DC universe setup. I don't think it's just chance. That's what they called the Grayson's partner there.
Interesting. But she's limited to Earth 2 in current 52, right?
The Huntress?
Yeah.
Is currently just moved back there in the World's Finest stuff. So maybe this is the whichever Earth the root New 52 titles are on, that version of Helena Bertinelli. There's a backstory to be had there, and I'm very curious what it is.
Okay.
As for is that the identity protection implant, you know, for the effect or not, don't know yet. I think that's actually a really good guess. I hadn't thought about that. I was more surprised that Grayson would agree to the implants for the hypno implant and the identity protection, and maybe there are others. That just seemed a bit kind of invasive, particularly for a group he's, like, going to spy on.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was a little puzzled as to why Spiral, the organization, would hire Dick Grayson, who's known to have been Nightwing, when Spiral's goal is clearly to unmask kind of all the metahumans. Now, whether everyone knows that or not is a little unclear to me. Is that just something the higher-ups are doing and Minos is part of and the agents are not? Or I don't know.
Yeah, that was something, you know, they just touch on in the last page. And I'm not sure if Grayson knows any of this. Or is that something he signed on for because he's been unmasked? He wants to. He sees the value in transparency. I'm not sure. We don't really get that sense. I don't think we don't have enough information here to take that leap. Really, what we know is he's working for the organization, but we don't know what he knows.
We know a little based on the last panel what the organization knows about a couple of people. And what it knows about one of them implies a certain couple of dots were not connected, which has me a little puzzled. So not totally sure what's going on there, but like you said, this had a beginning, a middle, and an end of a story, not to say the story. It's certainly got a lot moving forward to tell us. It's not a, okay, it's over, the end. It's got, well, frankly, it ends on the words "to be continued," but had a nice sense of closure for the issue. And I don't need comics that are just done in one and that's it.
Right.
But have enough of that done in one aspect to make me think, wow, this was a great issue. I've got the full story. What's next?
Exactly. There's a line. And the way Moon Knight does it, which is cool in a way, but it's they're almost disposable, interchangeable. You don't have to read them in order. They, you know, they're all pretty self-contained, and you can read them or not read them, and you don't lose out, at least through the first five.
And in this, self-contained and a little disconnected.
Yeah, and there's no through line, but you've got the through line here that keeps it going forward and connects it to its past and its future.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but it also has a solid story with a beginning, middle, and end. And, you know, it shouldn't be that difficult, but it is. It must be too difficult for creators to do a beginning, middle, and end in a 20-page book.
I disagree. I've got a comic sitting in front of me that proves it can be done.
Oh, yeah, it can be done. I just think it's too hard. It's too much effort for the creators because so few creators do it.
I question if it's a matter of how much effort it is or if that's just not what they're setting out to do.
I think it's effort.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm saying I don't know. To me, this was probably, I mean, this is one of the strongest first issues of the New 52.
Yeah, great issue.
I'd be a little hard-pressed to name more than, say, Superman number one that I thought was stronger than this. But man, great issue, well worth the read, really great job on the writing, the art was beautiful, highly recommend this. This is a 5 out of 5 for me.
I'm close, I'm not quite there. It's a high 4, I thought I did a great job. There was, you know, a little bit of downtime in this. I didn't think it was guns blazing throughout, but it's still a very good issue. I recommend it for everyone to read, and it's a really solid issue.
Yeah. I am very glad it wasn't the train wreck. I had a little bit of fear that it could possibly be.
Yes.
So, shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Spider-Man 2099, number 1. How familiar are you with Spider-Man 2099?
Let's see. He did a couple issues in Superior.
Uh-huh.
He guested there, and I think I read his title, the first issue, and didn't like it back in the last series.
Okay, so you were around when they did the whole 2099 stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I read all the.
Well, whether I was current or not, or I just picked one up and read it and didn't like it, I'm not sure when.
Fair enough, but you at least had some exposure. You knew.
Yeah.
About the 2099 universe to some extent.
Yes, yes.
Because it's old enough and, frankly, just obscure enough that I think there are a lot of people out there who aren't going to know much about it. And it was basically a, I don't say a pocket universe, it's not the right word. It was a pocket continuity. It was an alternate future, technically, of the Marvel universe that they did. Frankly, I'd have to go look up when they did it. I didn't think to check that. But they had, you know, Spider-Man, a Fantastic Four, and a bunch of other, some new characters, Ravager and stuff like that, just set in the year 2099. Spider-Man was the most successful of the bunch. And, I mean, bringing the characters back is kind of interesting. I felt with this issue, there was a little bit of an assumption that the reader sort of knows a little about Spider-Man 2099. I mean, nothing specific. I mean, the basic backstory is in the issue. You get enough to get who he is, but I think, or you get enough to know his backstory. I think they were kind of expecting the reader to kind of already sort of get and know who he was. And I'm figuring most of the people who are going to read this either were fans of the original Spider-Man 2099 run or really liked the character when he appeared recently in Superior Spider-Man. I think it's accessible to new readers, but it didn't seem like it was aiming at them and targeted to them.
I thought it was pretty accessible. The original 2099 came out in 1992.
Okay.
So that's a while ago. And I didn't think he was handled very well by Dan Slott in those two issues. One of the very few missteps in that Superior run, I thought, was shoehorning him in. I didn't think that those issues worked as well. Mm-hmm. But here I thought it was a really solid on-ramp for the character, and I thought he worked better in his own book than as a guest star in the Superior run, I felt. Mm-hmm. And I didn't find him as abrasive. I didn't find his dialogue as annoying as I felt. I mean, this is not faint praise. I thought this was a really good issue. There was some fun stuff with the fight scene. I thought there was a lot of good humor in this. Mm-hmm. And once again, a good solid story, a good intro. And then, you know, with the female character at Alchemax.
Liz Allen.
Liz Allen. Yeah, you know, we've got enough there to, you know, bring us in and send us forward, and an ongoing mystery that we'll be exploring, and some intrigue there. So I thought it was really solid, and I thought the art was solid. And of course, it's Peter David, right?
Doing writing.
Yeah. So yeah, he's pretty good. but yeah, I thought it was a really good issue.
I thought it was a lot of fun. Again, I question how many people are going to come into this that aren't already fans, which is a shame, because I think this is frankly one of the better issues that Peter David's written lately, and he doesn't write bad issues. But there were some, for me, laugh out loud moments in this. There are a couple of characters that were just fun. The dialogue was great. I mean, there are a couple of things here and there that just struck me as a little odd. The main antagonist in this issue is an agent of Totem, the Temporal Oversight Team Eliminating Mistakes.
Yeah.
Which I found interesting because that team had one person in it. Okay. And then his outfit had these loose tube-type things, kind of like how Bane has for his Venom stuff. Like, that just seems like really poor design, and you would think in the future people would have realized you could, you know, I don't know, grab those and snap them off, or I don't know. That's something that I think is going to come back to haunt future members of Totem. But the way this all played out with the lead character, Miguel O'Hara, and his, I guess, great-grandfather or whatever, some of that was a lot of fun. The use of Liz Allen was great. And, you know, overall, I really enjoyed this issue, and it was very Spider-Man-like in tone and style, yet very different and distinctive enough to not just, oh, it's another Spider-Man book. You know, when Liz Allen is saying, you know, you're not joking around like, you know, Spider-Man should or does or whatever. And the response to that, I thought, was great. But, you know, with Spider-Man, now Spider-Man 2099, we've got Scarlet Spider over currently in New Warriors, who had his own title recently. We've got Venom, who's over in Thunderbolts. I mean, it's no surprise that Spider-Verse is coming. That seems a little inevitable with all the Spider characters looming around. This was a strong first issue. It's one that I hope a lot of people check out. I fear a lot of people are just going to dismiss it out of hand without trying it, and I think that's a shame. This to me was a very strong 4 out of 5 with a lot of potential, and frankly, it even seemed to subtly foreshadow the possibility of crossing over with all new X Factor.
Yeah, I thought this was another great debut. This was a 5 for me. This crested the hill, and I think it was the Totem agent that really, I just thought he was a great foil, and I really liked the stuff that he had to say, the back and forth. Mm-hmm. I really liked Tempest, the character that was introduced at the beginning to clean up the quote unquote Mercurochrome. And her look is very similar to the lead female character in Saga. I don't know if that's accidental, but it reminded me of her, and her attitude was kind of reminiscent of her. And so I look forward to that relationship going forward. There's a lot of kernels that they've left here throughout. While telling a great story, they have a lot of seeds that they've planted that I can't wait to see what they grow into. And so that's a great issue in my mind, and I'm excited for this issue, and I really didn't think I would be. My expectations were super low.
Well, and I think a lot of people are going to have low expectations, and as a result, some people are going to skip it, and I think that's so frustrating to me, because like you said, not only was this a really great issue, But like the you said, so many seeds are planted. There's so much potential of where this title can and hopefully will and does go, that it could just be an outstanding read, you know, for months to come. And if enough people don't check it out, we may not get that opportunity. And that would really kind of, you know, frustrate me, because I like titles that in a first issue are able to set the scene, show the characters, give us a really good, entertaining story, and again, set up so many other potential stories that just seem like, okay, we've got what Liz Allen is kind of going after. Okay, what's the story with this Tempest character? What's going on with Totem? You know, the whole, does the timeline change or not? I mean, there's just right there, there's a ton of stuff. And Peter David has a long track record of doing a lot of great comics. This is no exception. And again, walking that line of staying Spider-Man-like enough to warrant the Spider-Man 2099 title, yet different enough to not just be, you know, it's a knockoff of Spider-Man. He nailed that. He got that perfectly. That balance was just wonderful.
And he's going to stay on X-Factor?
Yes, I believe so. I see no. I have not heard him getting off. Now, okay. Did you catch the subtle reference to X-Factor at the beginning?
I don't think so, no.
The truck that's being driven.
Yeah, it had something written on it.
Serval Industries, which is the sponsor of X-Factor.
Okay, nice.
So that was probably just an in-joke or whatever, but I could definitely see the potential for a crossover between the two, which could be fun.
Yeah.
So, shall we move on to our other book of the week?
Yeah.
This is Sherwood, Texas, number one from 12 Gauge Comics. And this is one that I saw in previews a while back and said, okay, let's give this a shot. It's Robin Hood in modern day Texas. And frankly, it's the kind of thing that could go either way, either great or not so much. I'll be honest, I'm still in the process of deciding where on that range it fell, because there were certain parts of this that worked for me, certain parts of it that didn't work for me so much. And I only pre-ordered the first issue, but no issues after that, so I do kind of need to make a decision on this. The funny thing is, one of the things that started the book off on a less than great aspect for me was the inside front cover. We get a map of Nottingham County, Texas, the city of Nottingham, town of Sherwood, Sherwood Forest, the lay of the land. And on the one hand, I think, wow, that's awesome. That's kind of cool. It's not like I've got to be, you know, mapping the streets or anything, but it's El Paso is where this is sitting. So I guess in this world, there is no El Paso, which
Are those real interstates?
Yeah.
So you know, these are like your neighbors.
That's not my neighbors. It's on the far west end of Texas. But I drive through this every year going to Comic-Con, which I'm about to do in a couple of days, actually, as we record this. So the minute I saw Juarez, I actually pulled up Google Maps, and it's like, yeah, that's precisely where, like, the University of Texas El Paso is and stuff like that.
So probably Shane Berryhill is maybe went to college there. It's a nod or an homage to hometown, maybe something like that.
Oh, yeah. And again, there's nothing wrong for that, but it's like, is this real world or not? I was expecting this to be middle of nowhere Texas, not one of the bigger cities in Texas, at least in the real world. I mean, El Paso's not tiny. But that just, I don't know, it broke, not the suspension of disbelief, but it put the title in a weird spot for me going in. I liked the fact they had the map and stuff like that. I thought that was a smart move. Overall, it just, for me personally, struck me a little odd. And then starting with a scene, and then flashing back 15 hours?
Yeah, well, how many times did we see this happening? Why? Why? It's such a crutch.
It's a huge writing crutch. I would be hard-pressed to name cases where I thought, oh yeah, they just had to do that. Flashpoint, the TV show, did it every episode almost. And it for what they were doing kind of made sense, but it's also a little annoying because it's like, okay, watch most of the episode. Oh, now we're back to where we started. You're playing catch-up, it seems like. Whenever I see a writing crutch like that, it always makes me think, maybe the story's a little weak. And I don't think this was a weak story, but there were a couple of creative choices they made that frankly, I don't know if I liked or not. There were a couple of places the use of splash pages just felt off. When we first see Rob riding the bike, it's a nice page of art.
Yeah, but it doesn't make any sense why that's a splash page.
Yeah, exactly. Why that? And then we get
the LJ's parking lot.
Exactly. Another one a page or two later.
Yeah, and there's some odd choices.
Yeah, they're not bad choices. They're not wrong choices, but it left me wondering why. Why did you make that choice? What am I missing here?
I think there's a panel where he lights a cigarette with a stick of dynamite. I think that would have been an impressive splash page. There's some, you know, fighting through the cave after he has his accident. You know, I think that there could have been some large format stuff that you could have done there, or even the zombie dad dream sequence. You know, you could have taken one of those and made those into a big spread or something. Those would have been better choices, I think. And I'm no artist, but I think those would have worked better than, you know, splash page of parking lot.
Well, how about the splash page where he's coming out of the cave and we get two inset panels on top of it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that could have worked as a splash page without those two panels. Bury those on the page before and the page after.
So some interesting decisions they made. The whole bit, like you said, with the zombie dad and him, he gets shot and he gets better.
I don't get it. I don't get it. If you had not told me before we chose this issue that this is you know, Robin Hood and blah blah blah, and this is going to be like a modern twist, and I wouldn't have known it. I mean, besides the guy's name is Rob Hood, I don't see any similarities. And I mean, I've only seen a few Robin Hood movies, but still.
Robin Hood is incredibly iconic. There was nothing here to indicate kind of the marksmanship of any way, shape, or form that I really noticed. Or at least it may have been in there, but it wasn't.
Any robbing from the rich and giving to the poor? No Friar Tuck?
Friar Tuck was there.
Was it?
He was the guy. He was the padre doing the funeral.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He's... frankly never seen particularly well. It's a reference that he'll go drink with the people even if Rob won't.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
So I mean, they get some of the names and stuff, and there was a point at which this felt like it was not quite a just by the numbers, but a little uninspired. And it's funny because I think we're going to possibly disagree on this. For me, when he got out of the cage and we saw the zombie dad,
yeah,
I'm like, okay, this is actually starting to turn around for me. I'm curious where they're going with this, because I have no idea. I was not expecting a supernatural aspect of this. So, like I said, I liked some of the issue. I didn't love the issue. There were a few places I was a little perplexed by the choices the creative team made, both in the writing and in the art. The ending has me curious where the series is going, but I haven't decided if I'll continue with it or not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everything from when he got shot on, I thought was very strange and confusing. And
strange good, strange bad.
Strange bad.
I thought you were going to think that. So yeah. I thought we'd have a different take on that.
I did. Yeah. It didn't turn a corner in a good way for me then. You know, there's not a lot here for me to go forward. This was a sampled issue for me. There's nothing here for me to say, well, I'm going to stick around and see what else happens. It's not like Translucent, where I may have been slightly confused in places, but I was so intrigued that I had to find out where this thing was going.
Translucent has me completely baffled, but I still want to know where it's going. Yeah,
I want to know anyway, in spite of it. And this, you know, there's some confusion, there's some odd choices, and I don't really care. I don't care enough to stick with it. It was okay, though.
That's the difference, though. You don't care.
Yeah.
With Translucent, I may be puzzled, but right. They've gotten me hooked enough that I care. I want to know how it ends.
I care. I want to know what the boy's doing. I want to know what's the deal with the horse. I want to know. And this one it doesn't do that for me. And if the literary tie-in maybe was a little stronger or a little more clever or worked better for me, I would have maybe stuck around. But that conceit, I don't think the conceit was really realized in issue one.
It certainly wasn't leveraged well and didn't have any sense of payoff. So I think that was part of the premise that fell flat. And maybe in later issues it really comes to the forefront. Based on the teaser, not the teaser, but the cover of the next issue, where we've got a guy with a crossbow or whatever, It looks like it becomes relevant there.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think the first page before we go 15 hours earlier, that first page undercut the issue. I think if we had not started with him getting shot there, which is like, really? You go there and by the time he gets back to this and shot again, it's like, I still haven't really grown to really know or like or care about the character.
No,
okay?
You could have spent a little time getting us to like him and then shoot him.
But by not having that first page, it would have been a bit more of a surprise at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And it undercut that whole sequence, I think. Again, my opinion, obviously the creative team here chose to do what they did, and I respect that. I'm curious what other people think of this, and if these guys are at San Diego or Wizard World San Antonio, I may hunt them down and just say, hey, you know, sell me on the rest of the issue. Should I continue with this or not?
They definitely might be at Wizard World if they're Texas people.
And let's see, they are Pelham, Alabama is at least where their office of publication is.
Oh, okay.
So, don't know. Close enough to San Antonio, it's at least within the realm of possibility. And I haven't looked at the booth list in San Diego to know if they're there or not. But to me, this was frankly a little bit all over the map. There were a couple of places where, frankly, I was starting to get a little bored with it. The whole supernatural thing kicked in. It got me re-engaged a bit, but not hooked.
Right.
I'm really at that. Is it a low 3 or a high 2? And I think I'm gonna go with the low 3 because there were decisions I disagreed with, but none of them where I'm thinking, oh my God, you put this out, you've got to be kidding. It was not where it got into the just unbelievably bad or sort of a thing. It was missed opportunities and failed to realize what they claimed the vision was.
Mm-hmm.
But frankly, a lot of books are just kind of there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a straight 2 for me. I can't recommend it to anyone. And, I would really classify it below average as a below average comic and definitely a below average issue number 1.
I think I am going to revise it. I'm going to go with the 2 because, you know, this is a first issue. And frankly, I feel I got more of the premise out of the previews pitch.
So solicitation, yeah.
Than the issue. And I hate to say that because I think these guys have potential and I think the series will pick up. But you're right, as far as not being able to recommend it. There's nothing here that makes you think, it's a weak start, but give it this. And that frustrates me because I want to be able to recommend a lot of what I read, but frankly, a lot of what I read, and I read a lot.
Right.
It's hard to do that. So I'm revising to a high 2, but still it's decidedly had room for improvement and not just potential, but the need for some of that improvement.
Now I'm going to jump ship. And I know it's going to be hard for you. Are you sticking around? Or are you going to? You've said you were sampling.
The funny thing is, I really need to decide soon because I need to get my next order in before I head off to Comic-Con.
Yeah.
I need to reread those solicits. If those solicits sound really good,
yeah,
it's possible. I mean, it's a 5-issue miniseries.
Yeah.
This was a $1 first issue, and I respect that. If this were a $3.99 first issue, that would have been more than enough to tip the scale and say, yeah, no. Even at a dollar, frankly, it was a little disappointing. But I like the concept, and I have faith in the concept, and that helps, but I don't know if that's going to be enough.
Yeah.
Again, if somebody can sell me on this, or maybe they've got more information or something, by all means, please do. I want to support some of these other publishers and stuff, like 12 Gauge and some of the smaller ones. Give them a shot, but I didn't hate the issue, it just failed to really... It was a missed opportunity. It failed to live up to what it claimed it was trying to do. So we're recording this early on Tuesday, so we can record next week even really early and week early and do that on a Thursday before I head off to San Diego and immerse myself in the world of comics and such. So I've only read about half what came out this week.
Still more than me, but I read Batman Eternal number 14, and this comic continues to be solid. And I like the fact that not only is it telling solid stories, but I think it's being rewarded in the sales figures as well. I think the last 4 whose sales numbers we have are all around 60,000, and I mean just boom, 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 and there's really not a lot of separation. So people aren't, it's settled into you know, a certain sales figure, and it's not really losing momentum. And I think folks are enjoying it. That means people are enjoying it. I think if you're selling 60,000 copies nowadays, that means that it's a solid book.
Well, particularly for a weekly book.
Yeah.
Because you're expected to invest in it, you know, not just once a month, but each and every week.
Yeah, it's a quarter of a million Batman Eternals every month being sold. That would, if it was one title, that would be a lot.
Yes, it would. That would be damned impressive.
if math worked that way.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is it doesn't. It's the same 60 people every issue, I'm willing to bet.
Yeah.
Thereabouts. Yeah. But this is one where the weekly, frequency really builds up the momentum. And man, again, the Jason Bard character, they're doing some great stuff with. They've kept all the stories pretty much in play. This was another 5 out of 5 for me. This series, just a couple issues back when it really kind of tied everything together and kicked in, I'm loving. And it was good before, great before, whatever, but it's kind of kicked to a whole nother level. If they can keep up the quality for the next, you know, for the duration of the series and stuff, they will not only have a really strong title, even if it's just going the 60 or whatever, but they can, this is a title I can see building up in sales later in the run, and really, when it ends, kicking some Batman titles up into high gear. I'm very pleased with how they're doing on this. I wish I could say the same thing about New 52 Futures End.
Yeah.
I think it's okay.
Yeah, it's just okay. That's the unfortunate thing. I think this is really good, and I think Futures End is just okay. And you know, if you're going to choose, you want really good.
Yeah.
And you know, hats off to Scott Snyder. I think he's crushing it on the main Batman title. It's really finishing strong. I can't wait for the next big arc that they hit into. They just announced it. I can't remember what it's called, but the advanced solicits are out, and they're talking about the next Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo story arc in September or so.
I saw that the solicits were out. They're out for as we record this. DC, Image, and Marvel, I believe. By the time this episode is posted, IDW and Dark Horse should be up as well.
Cool.
So please, people, start prepping your clips. Send them in. If my email box gets kind of full while I'm on vacation or whatever at San Diego, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, you don't mind, do you?
Well, I can download them on the road just as easily as at home. Not a problem. And there should be tons of great announcements and stuff.
But love what Scott's doing there. I love what he's doing on Wake. I love what he's really crushing it right now. And I'm glad that he keeps taking on these new. Of course, I'm not reading Superman Unchained, so I don't know what's going on over there.
You know, the other one that really surprised me this week, and I actually gave a 5 out of 5 to, was Captain Marvel.
Oh, really?
That has kind of circled back to where the series started, gone a bit further than that, put the character in a very almost untenable position from which she was able to really shine, and it really, aspects of it really came together and worked very well. Now, I may read this again at some point and say, you know, maybe that was too high or whatever, but it was a fun read. It ended on a strong narrative beat, even though it was not the end of the story. It was a fun, good read, you know, and some of what I'm reading these days is solid, other stuff not so much. The other one that just came out of nowhere, and it's like, wow, they chose to do that and really pulled it off, was the 100th anniversary special for Spider-Man.
Oh, I haven't read that yet. It's good.
They did it as if it was the final part of a big Spider-Man event storyline. And so you're coming in at the last chapter of the thing. And do you know what's going on before? You know just enough to step in and run with the story. And man, it was great.
Yeah.
They made some interesting choices. It's like, I wouldn't have expected that, but that played, that worked. Okay. I can guess at enough of what went on to get it to this point. Some of these others have been frankly a bit forgettable and or something that I think will be forgotten. They had a really solid idea here, and choosing to jump to the finale of the story and whatnot like that was a gutsy move, and I think it paid off.
That's great. Superior Foes 13 was really solid.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. don't understand why only 17,000 people are reading this. It really surprised me. It's really a really good title. It's a well done title. Laugh out loud, funny, great stories. And, you know, I guess, you know, it's just not, there's no hero there. So I guess that must be it. The old adage does hold true. You know, that villain books don't sell. So
actually I can point to a counterexample of that.
Yeah.
Harley Quinn, second best selling DC book right now.
Harley Quinn, you know, I talk about this a lot. It's very surprising. It sold 93,000, issue 7 sold 93,000 copies, and it is climbing. Each issue is selling more and more. And I think
actually that's not the case. This was a huge jump on the last issue. We're almost getting into Mayo Report stuff, which is fine because the actual Mayo reports are going to be delayed this month because of San Diego. But what happened there was it had been going down a bit, leveling off pretty well at a fairly high rate, level or whatever. But then with the Bombshell cover and Poison Ivy guest starring, that really skyrocketed and bumped up the sales on the most recent issue we have the numbers for. But regardless, it was like the fourth best selling before that bump on the latest issue.
Yeah. I mean, the month before ongoing. It was still pretty solid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I'm trying to figure out why that is. And I think it's because it's the book that shop owners can hand to female readers and say, here, try this.
It's a widely recognized character.
It's the go-to for that, I think. It's the go-to. If you want to try this female-led book, this is a good one. And I wonder if that's part of it.
I don't know. I'm not sure because that's not what leaps to my mind is reasons for why it's doing so well. I think it's certainly a viable theory, but widely recognized character. They're doing the take from the video game series, the Arkham stuff that was really popular. The art's fantastic. It's got a done-in-one aspect to it. Not a here's the story, the end, or whatever, like we were talking about earlier. It's got a sense of completeness and wholeness to it, a good pausing point, and then you move on to the next issue, and the story goes for another issue. Without being a chapter one, chapter two, chapter three, read them all or none of it makes sense aspect. Amanda Connor being attached certainly helps.
She was on the cover of a lot of Suicide Squad issues, and they didn't sell that well.
Oh, yeah. Suicide Squad doesn't have the sales, I think, to warrant the new Suicide Squad, which also launched this week.
Yeah.
Which I thought was middle-of-the-road book. It was okay.
Yeah. Well, I haven't read Harley Quinn all the time. I haven't read all 7 issues. I did read 7, and there were a couple of the early ones that I thought they were just struggling to tell a story. So it's gotten better.
It is outperforming the previous Harley Quinn title by such a wide margin. I mean, the level of success it's having is unprecedented based on Harley Quinn and Gotham City Sirens. There's something there that's adding the extra factor to make it one of the better selling books out there. I just am a little lost as to what that is.
I had forgotten about the Bombshell cover.
That did well for DC across the board.
Yeah, I had forgotten about that.
The brilliance there was it was independently orderable. So it's not like it was a ratio cover where a retailer had to order 25 of the regular copy to get the one. They could order whatever they wanted.
And they have the selfie covers coming up too, which might be
similar. They've got that. Then they've got the 3D covers. I haven't looked at the latest solicits that went up to know what the next theme is. And I'm not a big fan of theme variant covers, but at least they're independently orderable, so that makes them a little more palatable in terms.
Yeah,
of that.
I like it better than 1 in 50s. I think it's less of a shenanigan than something where you have to buy 100 to be able to buy it. You know.
And you know, showing what they are earlier. I mean, the Bombshell ones look amazing, so I see the appeal of it.
Yes.
And they're not, you know, doing it from a mercenary standpoint of, like you said, the ratios and whatnot. So I think it's still not great profits, but it's not the really bad profits that I think the Chase covers are.
Right.
So again, we've recorded this episode early. We're recording it on July 15th. We're about to another day or two days actually record the next episode. So by the time this goes up, I will be somewhere between Austin, Texas, and San Diego, quite possibly El Paso. I don't know.
Somewhere near Sherwood Forest.
Exactly. I'm going to be heading, of course, to Comic-Con International. We've got the ninth annual All-Star Comic Book Podcasters panel happening at 4 p.m. on Thursday. That's going to be in room 28DE. By all means, come check it out. If you want to say hi, that's probably the easiest place to find me, either a little before or right after the panel. Love meeting listeners and stuff like that. That's always fun. If you can't make it to Comic-Con, and it's a big trip, expensive, and frankly, really tiring, but you happen to be going to Wizard World San Antonio, I will be there on Saturday, August 2nd, or at least that's the plan. Depends how the drive back goes and such like that. If you want to meet up there, send me an email, let me know, and we'll see what we can arrange. Because again, I love meeting people who listen and just talking to other comic collectors.
Should be fun.
Should be. Should be exhausting, too, I'm sure. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Does it for me.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Teen Titans number 1 from DC, X-Men 16 from Marvel, and Doberman number 1 from IDW.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.